Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
And here they are, live in the flesh. Harvey Mushman, the producer of Wild Travels. Will Klinger, who you've just heard, the host of Wild Travels. It's back for its second season. When it came back about a year and a half ago, I literally said it was the television event of the year. It was January.
But, yes, you did.
But I meant it. And that run, your first season, was, I thought, extraordinarily fresh for something that was born many years ago. Let's talk about the Wild Travels is the child of Wild Chicago.
The successor.
Yes.
Yes.
The lively child of Wild Chicago.
So we took about 12 years off between the end of Wild Chicago. We matured a little bit. Not much.
Oh, not much at all. I've seen these shows. Not much at all. Charmingly not at all. Charmingly not at all.
And we came back.
Well, Ben Hollis, who does and did, I haven't talked to him in the last week or so, but he really loved the fact that you guys brought it back. Because, well, when Ben left, they had that crazy kind of playoff to find out who
search for the new host. Yeah,
it was insane, and they got you and Laura Meagher, Lauren, who now lives in Paris.
Nice.
You and she started, then she left, and then you wound up with a number of other
guest correspondents. We called them
wild correspondents.
Guest correspondents. Yeah, potential vice presidential candidates. And then it ended, and you guys would see each other around. Harvey, you went off to produce other things. Will has a very lively voiceover and acting and comedic career in this town. And then one day you guys said what?
Will actually invited me to dinner, which is a very rare event.
I actually pitched an idea. I had written a script for a faux travel series, like a really goofy guy that was constantly making egregious mistakes on the road, and you know, this was his travel show. And Harvey said, why don't we do a real travel show, and not in Europe, but in America? I was going to do it like a Rick Steves kind of a takeoff.
Yeah,
he said,
sure,
let's do it here, and let's do an actual, you know, show. And I said, you know, that's...
One of the things about the show, and I've seen a number of the episodes, it premiered today, and it's actually on. You can see it again at 11 o'clock after these gentlemen bid you good night. The new season, one of my fears last season, and did not prove to be correct at all, is that somehow in this new internet age and this new 12 years between shows, that the kind of places that Wild Chicago used to visit and the kind of places that Wild Travel likes to visit, that you wouldn't be able to find these kinds of places anymore. Was that an initial fear at all?
No, not a fear, just that there are probably more well-known because of the internet, which,
sure,
you know, we didn't have when we started Wild Chicago. So there's the wildness is out there. All the destinations, we're never going to run out if that's where you're going with this.
Yeah, that was where
honestly,
I was going.
Honestly, you know, we did 1,000 stories in Chicago alone. So, no, I have no fear that we're going to run out of material. Some of it may already be known or it has been showcased by someone else by now. But, no, there's just tons of material out there.
The Muhammad Ali Museum at a used car lot in New Jersey is not known to me.
Well, you just don't read the same things I read.
The mooning of an Amtrak train was not known to me. The museum of where people make art out of bugs was certainly not known to me. That's why this show comes at me so fresh. And, Will, I got to tell you, I don't know if you've been rejuvenated or you are on drugs or something, but you are beyond your charming self in the episodes I've seen so far.
I've goosed it to the next level, Rick.
You did. How did you manage that? You're not getting any younger.
I don't know. You know, that camera turns on and it's magic time. What can I tell you? No.
But your enthusiasm has always seemed genuine to me.
It is. I have a lot of fun doing this show, and I always enjoy meeting the people we get to meet and seeing the places we get to see. It really is a great gig, you know? It's a gig that never gets boring, never gets tedious.
You also, that first season, you guys really had to do on a shoestring, and I would imagine that the second season was no different. You didn't make
same pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Same pair of shoes, same shared hotel room, same...
All right, let's not get too close.
How do you go about finding the places? Obviously, the internet is of some help.
It's just good, serious research and shoe leather. No, I read a lot of obscure travel magazines and articles, and I'll read something, and there's an offhand comment about the Palace of Gold in West Virginia. Well, I'd never heard of that. And so, you know, I dug a little deeper and found out this is where all the Hare Krishnas went, to this tiny town near Moundsville, and it's called New Vrindavan. And there is a palace made of gold there, and it's just astonishing. And, so we try to plan our trips where we have a number of interesting things within one cheap airfare.
Well, Florida seems to be
gold mine.
The gold mine that keeps on giving. Yeah. Keeps on giving. We're going to play throughout the show, thanks to L.F. Garrett, the producer, a number of preview clips. They're not the whole thing.
Well, some of them are the whole thing, but we won't have to listen to the whole thing. But if you want to start with Moon Amtrak, which you referenced already, I think that's...
L.F., could we do that?
That's a pretty good one.
This is an astonishment, ladies and gentlemen. You don't know about this, but you will now.
This is the 35th mooning of the Amtrak. It always occurs second Saturday in July every year. The event started when a guy was having a birthday in here, and he said that he would buy drinks for everybody that went out and mooned the Amtrak. So people in the bar went out there, mooned the Amtrak, he bought some drinks.
About a year later, they happened to be sitting in the bar on the same day, and somebody said, hey, it's the anniversary, we should do it again.
The third year, there was just too many people for him to buy drinks for, but everybody just started showing up.
After that, it just started taking off little by little.
Second Saturday in July, Moon the Amtrak.
One of the hallmarks of you two fellows, Will Klinger and Harvey Moshman, Will the host, Harvey the producer. What's the nice name of the cameraman, Dan?
Dave Seaman.
Dave Seaman. He's still on this year, too. Because there's a unique look. I mean, you guys fashioned a look with Wild Chicago that is, frenetic's not the right word. Lively is the word I'm going to use.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Okay. And there's never been, one of the interesting things, too, before we take a break, and these guys are on till 11, is it nothing, I have not seen anything come around. And I watch a lot of TV. I used to watch a lot when I was a TV critic. That is anything like what you guys do? Am I just not watching enough TV, or is your creation unique?
I think we've got a niche. You know, I don't see too many things like our show.
Talk to me as a producer. The look of that show, how do you describe it?
Some have called it nearsighted, but, we follow the action. When we started doing the program in 1989... cameras were different. We weren't in high def. We didn't have really good lighting. And everything was sort of a shoot from the hip style. And we would rarely go back and redo anything. So, you know, some stuff didn't make it because it was just horrible looking. But most of the stuff passed the litmus test. And we put it on. And Dave and I shoot some of the show. We pretty much use the same character when we shoot. We just follow the action and keep moving.
Yeah, and you do. I mean, you can talk about Will. I think Will is nothing short of a genius at his ability to interview. Look at, he's blushing, but to interview some people who are a little unusual without making fun of these people. That's a gift. Believe me, I think that's really a gift.
And there's the quote for the website in case anybody's listening. No, we...
go ahead.
The style of the show has really not changed so much since we made Wild Chicago. It works fine. It's a very economical style. We listen carefully to what's going on, and that's the secret. Is that you know, you hear something and you go, oh, this is going to be great to see on camera, and the camera goes there, and it's a bit of a dance between Will and the camera, and it seems
to
work.
These nice fellows and the photographer too visit a nudist colony. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the theme music to Wild Travels, which is back as of tonight on WTTW Channel 11. You can see it at 11 o'clock tonight. WildTravelsTV.com is the website. In studio, our host, Will Klinger, and producer, Harvey Moshman. You went and you go to... all manner of places. You just heard about a place that moons Amtrak. You sent me a lot of rough clips of some stuff that may or may not get in as you were putting together the entire season. One that I was terribly intrigued by, not because it's salacious, ladies and gentlemen, but because I wondered how Will Klinger would handle this because he wears clothes 99% of the time, as far as I know. And you guys, I don't know if it'll be on TV. You don't either. You still got to figure out what's up. But he went to a nudist colony. Where was that, Will?
In Cypress Cove, Florida.
I told you, Florida's the state that keeps on giving, man.
Oh, yeah.
How, obviously, there's inherent interest, perhaps prurient as it might be, in a nudist colony. Were they game to have you come in and do a piece?
Absolutely, yes.
And by the way, they don't like the use of the term colony, we found out. Close to leper's colony. They prefer
resort.
Nudist resort.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I would prefer to go to a nudist resort rather than a nudist colony, too.
And I'd prefer...
But wait a minute. There are no
both
leper,
to leper's
there are no
colony.
Leper colonies anymore.
We'll find
That's
one.
Like
when...
Papillon, the movie. How was that for you? Was it awkward? Was it... the people I saw Will interview in it were to my mind, charming.
Oh,
they
very
were
charming.
Naked, but they were charming.
And not self-conscious at all, really. I mean, I was self-conscious.
But they didn't seem to make you. This is one of the things where your interview skills were at their peak, so to speak. You didn't seem awkward. You didn't play it up too much about, hey, I have clothes on. They treated you like just a guy who's doing an interview and you wear clothes. It wasn't like, hey, take your clothes off, was it?
No. And you noticed we were very careful with the camera. One guy had the volleyball.
Yes.
You know, the volleyball.
Yes, the perfectly placed volleyball.
The perfectly placed geranium with those two women.
The two women.
Yeah. I mean, I think I asked him at one point, the most salacious I got, I asked him, you're not looking at me and imagining me naked right now. And he said, no, of course not.
No.
Of course not, because it's
are
not.
Are you crazy? Yeah, that's not what we do. We're all naked here.
Right.
But the place itself, when you... Are any places, do you have to show them clips of previous shows? Are some places sort of suspicious of you guys?
Well, that one in particular is very interesting because we did a piece on the Chicago Sun Club, which is actually in Indiana, for Wild Chicago years ago. We actually won an award for that. And I sent them both a picture of the award and out a clip of that one, and they immediately knew we meant them no harm, and they could trust us.
Was the award for best nudist filming?
Something like that. Yeah, I have to look.
Yeah, I'd like to know what that was. Was it an Emmy?
No, that wasn't an Emmy. That was some kind of plaque of gratitude for the exposure.
How often do people turn you down?
It's pretty rare. I would say when we start casting the net for what we're going to do in any one city, we probably have 15, 20 ideas. We'll end up shooting 12 or 13 of them, and maybe one out of the bunch doesn't get it.
And some I have to assume, with all of your skills, that you go in, you go to a place that's not quite what you might have imagined it to be. And the person you're talking to is not valuable or interesting or anything, and you have to tape it and dump it.
We try not to dump things because we can't afford that. No, we tend to make a shorter piece out of those.
Okay.
You know, I talk to people on the phone a lot before we commit and to try to get a sense of how they're going to be on camera. We're wrong sometimes, but yeah. Most of the time, our batting average is pretty good.
How about the President's Hall of Fame woman?
Oh.
We went into this thing, and she couldn't have been more unfriendly and more, prickly when we walked in. And then when the camera went on, she turned on the charm, and she was one of the best interviews we had.
Yeah, she was a hoot.
The President's Hall of Fame, also in Florida for some reason.
Yes.
Well, you went to... You went to Wiki Wachee. What's the name of that place?
Mermaid Show.
Yeah. Can we do it? Do we have a tape of that?
Yes, we do.
Let's listen to this. Elif, don't worry.
It's on the list.
We're going to play the, we got about five, I think it's about a 5-minute piece, but they're at Wiki Wachee, which I found really interesting. And I also learned something that Wiki Wachee, which has been a venerable tourist destination,
since
means
the 40s.
Either Winding years. River or Little Spring. Here's Wild Travels at Wiki Wachee.
We've got the world by the tail.
The Wiki Wachee Mermaid Show has been thrilling little girls and not-so-little boys for decades now. So we went behind the scenes to learn the secrets of this underwater extravaganza. Turns out being a mermaid is no walk in the park, especially with a tail for legs. Hey, John, how you doing?
Hi, Will. How are you doing?
We're here at Wiki Wachee.
Wiki Wachee Spring State Park, that's correct.
What does Wiki Wachee mean?
Wiki Wachee is Native American, and it means winding river or little spring.
It's an actual spring, isn't it?
It's on a daily basis, where the aquifer is 65 feet below, 117 million gallons of water each and every day come out from the aquifer, making the Wiki Wachee River that you see behind me. Well, Wiki Wachee Springs has been around since 1947. We're one of Florida's oldest roadside attractions.
Now, those mermaids can't go without breathing for a long time, so they created this apparatus. It was the founder that did it, didn't he?
Correct. Newton Perry was an avid diver, and he wanted to not really put the girls on scuba gear, so he created the self-regulated breathing air hose that we still use to this day. It's very difficult to use. I tried it once, and it's just something that you just can't master it.
John, you're no mermaid. Don't even pretend to be.
I'm no mermaid, and I'm not even going to pretend to be one.
Why no merman, John? No merman.
We have a couple of male performers.
They're not wearing fins.
They're not wearing fins because there's not a role for one. Anything that inhabits the Wiki Wachee River can actually swim into the show. Fish, turtles, otters, even the occasional alligator will come swim into the show.
I bet the mermaids swim like frenzy right out of the water.
You know, they're kind of used to it, but it's safe to get out of the water if there's an alligator present. Absolutely.
These are the famous Wiki Wachee mermaids.
Hello.
What are the requirements of being a mermaid, besides obviously vivacious attractiveness?
A lot of hard swimming, like hard work.
You gotta be a good swimmer, right?
We don't wear weight belts, so we have to stay at a neutral buoyancy.
Yeah, tell me how you do that. It's breathing,
breath
right?
Breath control. You know, like if you exhale your air, you sink to the bottom of a pool, well, you wanna keep half of it in so you can stay right where you're supposed to be.
How long have you been a mermaid?
On and off since I was 18. And I'm 37 now, so...
Wow.
It's her first show.
You're the newbie.
Yeah.
Are you a little nervous?
A little bit.
Now, I haven't seen too many mermaids with glasses.
Yeah, I'm pretty blind. You want to try them on and see how blind I am?
Do you wear these underwater?
No.
Oh, my God. So once you go down that hole, you're underwater for 30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 to 45 minutes.
Isn't that a little cold down there? I mean, your body temperature probably lowers, huh?
Yeah, my toes are literally white.
I think I'd be nervous just dropping into a well like this, you know?
You have an air hose in your hand, and there's air hoses throughout it, but it's 16 feet down and 63 feet out.
Far out in our sea, the water is as blue as the loveliest cornflower and as pure as the clearest glass, and it is deep. Here dwell a strange and wondrous race of people. Half human, half fish. Let's celebrate, everyone!
We're not like other women. do that talking in underwater? I would think the water would rush in and you'd, you know, drown.
Yeah, it's a lot of practice. After a few times, you just get it. It's just like talking. You just can't inhale the water.
You get, it's kind of in your mouth like this, yeah. And you're talking like that.
Really, you got to time yourself so you can get to the next breathing tube without choking or something.
We carry them with us. We'll carry one with us. Sometimes we drop them to do dolphins or we'll do Ferris wheels. You'll see us drop them a lot of the time, but for the majority of the time, it's in our hand.
Hang on to that darn thing. That's your lifeline.
Welcome back. I have Harvey Moshman, the producer, and Will Klinger, the host, in here. The new season of Wild Travels, the second season of Wild Travels, the bastard child of Wild Chicago, which they buried 12, 13 years ago. WildTravelsTV.com is the place to find it and get. And it's a nice website. It tells you all about it. But the best thing to do, even in this age of, you know, instant watching of everything, is to watch it when it's on. It's on tonight at 11 o'clock. Will, you are inherently curious. Yes, you can't fake this. I don't think you can.
No. And it's it comes honestly. I find it endlessly fascinating, some of the places we go and some of the quirky hobbies that people have fascinate me.
Well, but the other thing, it's also the people, for some of these people, not only are they serious hobbies and avocations, but for some, at this, talk to me, you guys, about this inventors convention that
Impex.
I was fascinated by.
So every year in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, there's a gathering of everyone who wants to make it big with the next invention, and a lot of this has been fueled by home shopping and now Shark Tank, and people sink their last dollar into, you know, getting a little booth, and some of the stuff that they're trying to sell. You look at this and go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry for you.
I know.
This is not going
to
make it.
Strangely, yeah. A lot of it, 70% of it seems to have to do with toilets.
Yeah, it's very big.
There was one in the little clip I saw. It was some kind of, like, outfit for a dog. If your dog pees on furniture, I have the solution, ladies and gentlemen. I have a what
kind of doggy
Barker wear.
Yeah.
Barker wear. And there was another woman in that same thing who had some kind of, like, for your old female shoes.
Shoe panties,
she called them.
Controversial name, but very, very useful to make your shoes really fashionable.
And then, Will Klinger, in one moment on film, you were trying to be fitted for something. I cannot remember what it was, but she would say, move your chin up, put your chin up.
That would be the breeze wind.
The breeze wind. Terribly redundant.
Which you brought up to her, and she kept trying to explain it.
There were seven settings to this scarf. How a scarf has settings, but it covers your nose, your chin, your nose. I couldn't breathe at
one
point.
Yeah, you look like you were dying in that thing.
Oh, yeah.
But you still, I mean, the great, I'll tell you guys again, you don't make fun of these people. You are respectful to
we try to be,
a point as you can be respectful.
Yeah. Because
you know
they have
to
sign the release. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Even the boo alert we showed some respect for, which is a ghost detector, which I was a little skeptical, frankly. In it.
How much was it? Or are they just trying to? Are they trying to sell these things individually, or are they trying to?
Well, they're trying to find a distributor. Usually, they go there hoping to, you know, make it to Walmart.
So I don't remember. I didn't watch the thing long enough. Yeah. Did you interview any of the people who go there to buy?
We didn't,
be a crowd
in this time around. But they are walking the floor and taking notes, and they have seminars there and. George Foreman is there actually every year to talk because he's a big success story with his grill. He's there to encourage people and
the other success story out is the revolving lollipop came out of that Impex. You know the thing where you put your lollipop and it revolves so you don't have to lick it. You just hold your tongue out.
Wait, is this so you could buy this somewhere?
Or? Oh, it's a legitimate product.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It came out of this convention.
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah.
Well, okay. Who knows that the shoe panties. How much time do you spend? I guess it would vary greatly, but You spend a whole day at a thing like that or a couple
Well, there's a, that's a huge footprint. I mean, it's a big convention center. So that's, yeah, that's the better part of the day. But mostly we do two to three pieces a day when we're on the road.
Yeah, talk to me about the Ali Museum. That caught me way off guard. The Ali Museum.
The unlikelihood of it being in a used car dealership was really what we loved.
There's a man named Steven Singer, big fan of Ali, and we shot this before
right,
he died.
Sure.
And he has collected material, including original prints from, Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, and all that is on the walls there. And he's a big fan. And the most amazing thing he has is that he has the autograph of 49 of 50 opponents that Ali fought.
He also has a poster of an opponent that Ali did not fight in, some kind of...
Wilt Chamberlain.
Chamberlain. Yeah.
Muhammad Ali versus Wilt Chamberlain, for God's sake. Never happened.
Yeah. He also has the X-ray of Ali's jaw when it was broken by Ken Norton.
Ken Norton.
Signed by Norton and Ali. I mean,
wow.
This guy has an amazing collection.
It's really astonishing. And I think it's the largest private collection of Ali memorabilia anywhere. And certainly in a used car dealership, it must be the only.
That's for sure. Did you like this guy?
And oh, I loved him.
He seems terribly affable. And
oh, he was great. Yeah, he loved it. He wanted us to come.
And
by.
He's met Ali. He met Ali.
Yeah.
Let's hear another one. Well, this is what do you got there, Harvey?
Mike the Headless Chicken Festival, I think, is worth a listen.
What about that, Elif? Can we get Mike the Headless Chicken Festival? We won't even give it any setup.
Here it is.
Of the many festivals we attend, none has a more objectionable premise than the one held annually in Fruta, Colorado, celebrating a barnyard accident that occurred decades ago.
Mike the Headless Chicken Festival started back in 1999 in a way to honor the will to live of Mike, the infamous chicken who lived for 18 months after his head was cut off.
My grandfather would cut the heads off and flip them over there, let them bleed out. My grandma would start, do the cleaning, and then when he got done killing, he'd help her clean. They got down to the last one, they still had one alive, and he figured he'd see if it lived till morning. And it did. So the next day, started showing people the chicken, and everybody thought it was interesting, and then a gentleman from Salt Lake, he was in the business of doing sideshows, and he convinced my grandparents that they ought to start on the sideshow circuit. When my grandfather cut the head off, he either missed or whacked a little high, and he left the base of the brain stem and one eardrum. I still own the famous axe that decapitated Mike. Got it hung up on the wall of my shop out at the farm.
Mike achieved considerable notoriety during his short life, including this spread in Life magazine. He finally succumbed to his injuries when the eyedropper used to keep his tiny esophagus clear couldn't be found. And the rooster that brought so much inspiration to so many choked to death. But he didn't die in vain. His spirit lives on in the hearts and minds of all the citizens in this small Colorado town, whose slogan could possibly be, "Come to Fruta, it's a no-brainer."
There's never been any documented proof of another chicken that lived losing its head.
Oh, my, fellas, oh, my. Will, you do some research before you go talk to these people, but you do mostly wonderfully on the fly.
We're kind of winging it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then do you write around that later when you've put the pieces together with Harvey's help, or how does that work? I mean, you narrate some.
Oh, yeah. We write that narration après shooting, when we've looked and after we've edited it, really.
Yeah.
We'll write the voiceover for it. And yeah.
Now, you don't, but you have a sort of repertorial skill here where I don't get the sense, and you're a terrifically talented actor, I don't get the sense that you're performing when you're on camera with certain people. Am I nuts, or are you?
No, I don't think it's performance. It's more, once you're in there going back and forth, the give and take, that's all you really concentrate on. I'm not trying to put on a character or anything, yeah. Unless it's called for.
Occasionally, Will
give me an example.
Take to camera.
Give me an example.
Have I ever
sure
play acted in anything? I don't think
see,
so.
These two guys really get along.
It's not often. It's not often. But no, I mean, Will plays it straight, and that's what brings out you know, the best in the characters.
Yeah, it's way better if the people we're talking to bring the funny. If it has
absolutely
to be always me, that's tedious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There was at some point last year when Wild Travels premiered after the hiatus from Wild Chicago, there was some hope, notion,
dream,
empty hope,
prayer,
empty prayer that you might be able to, the national syndication might be possible. Do you still think that might happen?
We still think that might happen, yes. There are several avenues for us to explore, and the most logical one at this point is nationally on public television. We have been given very favorable response from three distributors that handle for public television, but, you know, the price tag is not small on these, and
sure.
We still need to find the appropriate underwriting in order to pursue public television.
Well, you've sort of put together a sort of interesting package, basically, of local Second City, Lagunitas, and some other people to
right, but that's, of course, just for the local air on,
right,
on TTW.
Right.
For national, Lagunitas might help us, but we're looking at all kinds of possibilities for that.
If any huge corporations are listening right now,
yes.
Rick.
Huge corporations
and
want to
bankroll this darn show. You know, it was meant to be a national because we go all over the country, for God's sake.
Of course.
All over this great country of ours.
All right, we got to take a short commercial break, then we'll come back and talk a little more with these guys and perhaps hear a couple more clips, because I think the clip should induce you to want to see the show throughout its whole season, because it did
in 15 minutes.
Yeah. It did really good. Last year, I remember when it came on, man, it was blockbuster.
Yes.
Ratings like tripled or quadrupled what was on in that time slot before. God knows what that was, but it tripled or quadrupled. And there's still a great affection for, you know, one of the interesting things now is I think there's a whole new audience out there for you. There are the old, oh, I used to love that Wild Chicago show. I want to see this.
Right.
But there's about a generation that doesn't know what Wild Chicago was. You know what I mean? And that's who you're going for.
We're less impressive at parties now because...
yes, you can't get free drinks the way you used to at bar. I'm the producer of Wild Chicago. We'll be right back. That's the theme of Wild Travels, which returns to TV tonight, the second season of Wild Travels. WildTravelsTV.com is their website. Do you have stuff to buy on your website? Do you have, like, T-shirts or anything?
No.
They're pure TV, these guys, Harvey Mushman and Will Klinger.
Yeah.
They don't care about commercializing.
Not sellouts.
I think we have some mustard.
Yeah, you do have mustard. Where did this mustard come from? Another fascinating, you guys got about five more minutes, and then you can go watch your own show at 11 o'clock on Channel 11. The Bug Art Museum.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. God is right.
Yeah.
God is right. That, one point we could go... You're looking at one thing and go, that's a lot of moths. It's like 10,000 moths or something.
Oh, yeah.
Where is that? How'd you find it?
It's in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. It's at the Fairbanks Museum, which also has a planetarium.
We got the audio. Do we have the audio for it?
We should.
Okay. That's where it is, and now here it is. This is the Bug Art. Is it called the Bug Art Museum?
No, it's called the Fairbanks Museum.
But there's a Bug Art section.
Oh, yeah. They have a section.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready.
You'll have to go to northern Vermont to see the work of 19th century artist John Hampson. But it might be worth the trip when you find out that instead of paint, Hampson used bugs. Thousands and thousands of dead bugs. Hello.
Hi.
What is your name?
I'm Adam Kane, the director of the Fairbanks Museum.
Adam Kane. That's biblical. Any relation to Eve and Abel?
No, but I can tell you my middle name is Isaac.
You know what we're here to see, don't you?
I do. You're here to see the amazing bug art.
Bug art. Art made from bugs.
art made from not just bugs, but thousands upon thousands and thousands of bugs.
Adam, what year did John Hampson start making the bug art?
He started in the 1870s. Each piece that he made took 3 or 4 years to collect all the bugs and then meticulously pin them or glue them.
Where did he get his bugs? Did he have a bug guy?
No, he was the bug guy. No, he walked for miles and miles every day with a net and a little bottle of cyanide.
Here's a big bug, but here is the bug art, right?
This is the bug art, between 6,000 and 13,000 individual bugs on each one of these.
How many different types of bugs did he use?
It ranges from some of the simple ones are 4 or 5, the more complicated ones are 10 or 12.
Beetles, flies, moths.
Yeah, a lot of moths. A lot of the background that you see are moths.
A lot of bugs died to make these paintings, let's be honest.
It was a lot of stuff.
He was a very patriotic guy, apparently.
Absolutely.
Even though he was not born in America, he's English.
He's English.
Here we have General Pershing.
General Pershing with General Washington.
Is it a cannon?
That is absolutely a cannon, yes.
And there's the balls.
And then this is actually my favorite one, I have to say. This is the one that he did for himself, celebrating his 50th birthday.
Is that July 9th?
Yep.
That's my birthday.
Is that right?
Have these ever been appraised? Do we know what they're worth?
We've never had them appraised. Can you put a price tag on 50,000 insects?
Priceless. Is it safe to say this is the only guy that was working in this medium ever? Did anybody else make bug art?
There actually is. Making artwork out of butterfly wings is pretty common. So there are a lot of butterflies.
That's just one bug. He used several.
Yes.
Adam, how did the Fairbanks Museum come into possession of these works of art?
Yeah, these came to the Fairbanks Museum in the early 1970s from the estate of John Hampson's daughter. In fact, they were shopped around to museums across New England and nobody else wanted them.
I find that hard to believe.
Isn't it? It's shocking, isn't it? This is one of our most popular exhibits. It has a cult following.
Who's got the last laugh now? Fairbanks Museum does.
That's right. And I would say John Hampson.
If you've got an itch for some bug art, the Fairbanks Museum can be found in lovely St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Wow. One of the hallmarks of you guys is there is an artistic element to you both, that you seek out interesting kind of folk artists, for lack of a better.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another guy you found in Louisiana who I thought was really fascinating.
Dr. Charles Smith.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. He makes...
He makes sculptures. It's the African American Heritage Museum and Black Veterans Archive, which he actually started here in Aurora, and then he moved down to Hammond. And I saw that he had moved. I don't know where I read it, but I was down in New Orleans shooting something else, and I went up to see him, and he gave me the tour again. Fascinating guy, absolutely.
Yeah. And this museum, I mean, as goofy as it sounds to me, those were, and I saw a little clip, you can see it. It's part of the first episode that's
right.
On 11 tonight.
It'll be on in 8 minutes.
8 minutes. that... It's indescribable.
It's rendered you speechless.
It has. It has, and that doesn't happen to me often. Another interesting person in this, in your Florida, again, Florida is just the state that it's
Motherload.
Giving, is the guy who is a golf ball diver full-time and picks up 8 million golf balls a year.
Yeah.
8 million golf balls. Do you like that guy?
I liked him a lot. And,
yeah,
you know,
he was terrific. And I had read a story, this was in the Bill Geist book, about a golf ball diver in Central Florida. And I the book is maybe 15 years old now or something like that. And I tracked him down and I said, we're coming to Florida. We'd like to do a story. And he says, look, I retired a multimillionaire. I don't do it anymore. Here's the guy who does it now.
Wow.
And it was the Jeffrey Bleim, who we ended up interviewing.
There's a lot of money in,
oh my gosh,
in wet golf balls.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's a lot of very bad golfers in Florida.
Yeah. Well, Will, I saw he got one of your golf balls, didn't he?
I put it right in the pond. And, yeah.
Well, it's got to be. I know it's a hassle, and I know you guys do it on a shoestring to travel around, and I know it's hard work. But you guys are exploring a sort of strata of American culture that very few people get to see in as broad a way as you do. It must give you some kind of hope about people and the creative urge of people that sometimes is really goofy, but that inherent urge to create or make. And it's not all about making money, I guess, but it's about just expressing themselves.
Exactly.
We find these subcultures and, you know, whether they're artists or collectors or whatnot, and, you know, they're all so genuine. They believe what they're doing has a purpose, and regardless of what the purpose is, it doesn't really matter for us, but just that they're sincere about it. And you know, occasionally we'll find somebody who does something because they want to get on TV. And, you know, you can tell right away that that's not going to work. So, you know, these people all pass the sniff test, and they turn out great.
Yeah. They're authentic, very authentic people. Authenticity is key.
Yeah, that's what this show really does. I mean, it's fun. It's lively, it's goofy, but it also there's an undercurrent there that I really, really, really appreciate, that the world hasn't gone all high tech and crazy and
thank God.
There's gonna be a lot of unsettling news on television this summer.
No question.
And we need something like this to take our mind off honestly.
You know, clean the palate.
The sad thing, I'm not trying to make too much of Wild Rose, but it gives me faith. I'm not sure what it gives me faith in. But it gives me faith in, you know what I mean? It gives me faith in something, that America is more interesting than I actually think it is, and there are more interesting people and places out there than I could possibly imagine living here in Chicago. You guys are the best. Producer Harvey Moshman and host Will Klinger. The second season of Wild Travels begins now. You can get all the information you want on WildTravelsTV.com. How many shows this season?
Six.
So how many total? Each one is different. There are four segments in each, or five, or some. There's
typically five in each. Yeah. We'll have 12 shows at the end of the season to debut somewhere else.
Good. And you could take this show on the. I mean, it'd be interesting to. No, you can't. I want this show to be syndicated somewhere. I want someone rich, really, and maybe this guy who collected 8 million golf balls and made a.
Eventually, he will back this show.
That's what you need, or one of the people from the Inventors Convention to strike it rich and say, "You gave me my first chance." Yeah. Someone saw
the shoe panties lady could, you know,
she could
be
strike
huge.
It rich.
That could easily. Well, but people sometimes who get rich are really selfish. I hope they give you the money. We'll take a little tiny commercial break, then I'll come back and sign off. Harvey and Will. Great to see you, and another great job. Read about him in a week or so in the Tribune, too.
Thank you.